You're listening to Cannabis Health Radio. Here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Health Radio. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
Like most people listening, I've never heard of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. It's a group of genetic connective tissue disorders due to a mutation in one or more of a dozen different genes. Who knew? It affects about 1 in 5,000 people worldwide. Our guest today didn't know she had this syndrome until it was triggered by a fever. And joining us to tell her story is Jenna Broom, who joins us from Washington State. Jenna, let's start your story 10 years ago when you ended up with rheumatic fever. Pick up the story from there.
Yeah, it started in January in North Carolina. In 2007, very mild there, and I was out walking and twisted my ankle, and it just never got better. And I would go to the doctor every 2 weeks, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And this literally started with one ankle, and it was my tonsils. It took them 2 years to finally, and they were drawing blood throughout the process, and they knew I had strep in my blood, but they couldn't find it. They didn't know where it was coming from. And it got to the point where I couldn't walk. I couldn't get up the stairs. My husband had to carry me and try to push me up the stairs. It was pretty rough. And then they finally realized, took my tonsils out, but that keyed off just the autoimmune response of attacking my joints. Keyed off the Ehlers-Danlos, and that's where we realized that there was a further issue causing my pain, because the pain just didn't go away. Most of it resolved, but it didn't completely resolve.
So you twisted your ankle. It wouldn't heal, and it was the result of strep tonsillitis?
Yes. Strangely enough, it ended up in all my joints through my hips. It went after my kidneys, and I had very little heart damage from it because I was on antibiotics for the entire time they were trying to kill it. But yeah, it started out with a sprained ankle.
And you didn't have like a sore throat when you hurt your ankle?
No, but I had strep through the years so many times. At one point when I was working, I would go in every 30 days and just get a test and a shot because the antibiotics orally weren't getting it. So for 6 months in a row, but my insurance at that point did not see it necessary to take my tonsils out. That was about 3 years before the rheumatic fever.
Oh, because the insurance company wouldn't pay for it. Your tonsils remained in.
Yes. Yes. And it abscessed in the back of the tonsils.
Did the doctors at any time look at your throat and say, Jenna, you've got strep? You've got tonsillitis?
Well, they looked at the front of my throat. I had really big tonsils anyway, I always had. So they were always problematic, and they would look at them, and they didn't appear bad. When they did send me to the ENT, he took the little flipper and flipped up the back of the tonsil and said, oh, this has to go now. So all they need to do was flip it up and look at the back, and they would have seen.
Well, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but if somebody's presenting with strep, the first place I would look would be the throat.
Well, and they did, and they swabbed my throat a few times. But like I said, it was the front, and because it had encapsulated in the back, it was all coming back negative.
I see. Okay, so that triggered your Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Yeah, it just made doctors aware, I guess, really. As a family, we've always been very limber and have different kinds of injuries. Mm-hmm. Like instead of breaking a bone, we tend to, our bones just kind of disjoint at the joint and pop out. So we've always known that was strange. It just never hurt us until, yeah, this autoimmune disease led it to attack the joints, and now it hurts.
Were you one of those kids who could pull their thumb right back?
Oh, I can take my pinky finger and fold it back, straight back on my hand, flat. As a kid, really? I was the one that would grab my leg and do a split up the wall. You know, I drove people crazy, yeah. I was in gymnastics.
Ian has a very pained look on his face. I think he's doing the visual and on imagining him doing that.
Well, and I'm thinking, and nobody noticed this.
Yeah, I mean, if it doesn't hurt, it's no big deal, right?
I guess so, except that there's a vascular component, which luckily I do not have. But there is a vascular component, so doctors need to be aware of this because it's very dangerous. One of my closest friends had her first heart attack in her 40s. And it just is what it is. She's got very weak veins and heart muscles.
So did you finally got your tonsils out, correct?
I did, yes.
And how was that?
That was awesome. That was in 2008. And like I said, I continued to have a few problems with the joint pain, but really I was doing much better. And then in 2012, I had to have a hysterectomy because of endometriosis that we weren't aware of. So that was another problem that was going on through that 4 years. And that has been a problem that I literally just resolved with a surgeon in Georgia, a specialized surgeon to get rid of endometriosis. Apparently, that's something in America we only have about 150 doctors who are actually trained to do it.
Were you on much medication over that period?
Through that period, I started out with Darvocet. I think they've banned that one now, which I find very interesting because I was never addicted to that one. It went from that to by the end of it, when I had my hysterectomy, I was taking 6 Percocets at a time so that I could walk.
Wow.
6 yeah. Percocets at once?
At once. My hips had popped out of place. It turns out that part of Ehlers-Danlos is we metabolize drugs very fast. So I would get about an hour's relief from taking anything, and that was it. It was gone. So they were following my liver panels closely, and for me, the drugs were causing the pain. When I finally came off of all that, my hips went back into place. I could walk again, and I have, you know, minimal pain. I feel it. I know it's there, but it's not screaming. So the pills were causing most of my pain, interestingly enough.
And how long were you taking the pills? 3 or 4 years?
No, I was on pills for about 7 years. Yeah, about 6 or 7 years. And it was a long journey.
That's quite remarkable that the medication they were giving you, the pain pills, were actually causing you the problems. And once you were off them, things started to return to normal for you.
It is interesting, and I try to tell people this because I know a lot of people with Ehlers-Danlos. I'm in a lot of the groups, and I see this problem so often.
I know, with my chiropractor, he was talking to me about this a couple of times. That there's more and more articles coming out in the medical books about it, that opiates are only effective for a couple of weeks, and then it starts doing a reverse thing of actually creating more pain.
Exactly. And then the doctors are giving people, you know, more things to cover that up, and the antidepressants. And
yeah, well, even like morphine, there's now some real question as to whether or not morphine actually increases cancer. Well, most cancer patients who go the orthodox route are on morphine.
Wow. Well, you know, I was even on that fentanyl patch, and I took that fentanyl patch. I did it one time, and it lasted 3 days, and I had the shakes after that. And I said no more because I felt great while I was on it, but it was an immediate withdrawal.
How difficult was it for you, Jenna, to get off these pain medications?
You know, luckily I had a very understanding doctor who was always working with me, and because he knew I didn't want to be addicted, he knew that stigma was something I was aware of. So he worked with me to come down off of everything, but it was hard. I ended up in the hospital a couple of times. Looking back, I now know it was withdrawals, but it was also, you know, after a hysterectomy. So I had those issues going. I had complications. I had to be hospitalized for a week afterwards from an infection. So I had problems, and I was stopping all the pills all at the same time. So I never quite knew what was what. And no doctor would acknowledge that it was withdrawals. Not once did a doctor say, your legs are shaking like this because of withdrawals from pills. Had they said that, I would have been fine with it. I would have gone home and taken more magnesium or, you know, tried to find something else to do. But I had no idea. I was just afraid.
When did cannabis come into play for you?
Right after the hysterectomy, during that time when I was having such a hard time with the pills and being in so much pain, my mother called and said, "You're going to have to stop taking those pills and start smoking weed." And she just retired from a community college. It shocked me. And I said, "Where am I going to get that?" She said, "I lived in Raleigh at the time." She lived near Duke, UNC, NC State. "Just go down there and find some."
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that is.
Your mother gets
your mother calling you up. Drop those pills and get some cannabis.
She called me out. She's like, I'm not going to watch my baby die. And looking at it now, I can see where I would be dead had I continued that path.
You think so?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, taking them six at a time and it not helping. Yeah. I mean, my choices were, I could have gone up to heroin, I guess, but I'm afraid of needles.
It's really unbelievable, some of the stuff that people are taking.
So what happened when you did cannabis for the first time?
Oh, that was just hilarious. My husband is actually a Baptist preacher's son, Southern Baptist. And he sat up in bed, and you're going to have to excuse the French, but he looked over at me and he said, "What evil fuck made this illegal?" And I immediately called my mom. I was like, "Mom, this is awesome."
Well, that's right, because nobody's ever died from it, have they?
No one has ever died from it. And then through that process, I reached back out to some people in my youth because I found out that my parents had smoked when I was in high school, and they knew some of the people in the small town we lived in that could help me out from 20 years previous. And so I started calling around, and I ended up through that route sort of meeting Rebecca Forbes, who had nothing to do with that. But it was really neat because she's the one who guided me into coming off the pills. Was the one who actually said, "Every time you want a pill, why don't you just smoke some weed?" And made that connection.
Yeah, we interviewed Rebecca back in the day.
Oh, yeah, the name is familiar.
Yeah, I know Rebecca.
Yeah, she's interesting. She helps a lot of people with that.
So you just did smoking? You didn't ingest oil or do topicals at all? Or not topicals or baked goods, edibles?
Well, right after I started smoking, not too terribly long after, I ended up out here at Hemp Fest in Washington because Rebecca was speaking. And so she asked me to come with her. And I thought, okay, I had no idea what I was stepping into. Not a clue. That was the most eye-opening, best thing that I've ever done in my life. Because of that, and it was so early on, and I had oils from the beginning. I had access, or at least the knowledge, to make my own. So I was ingesting. I was making, butter and coconut oils, and I was making my own lotions. And I made suppositories this last surgery that I had in November. By the time I got to the hospital, I was gray. When the doctor saw me, he said, "You're going to have surgery pretty fast because the endometriosis, people don't realize that can kill you." And it had attached to my lungs and my diaphragm, so I couldn't breathe. And it had attached my colon to my stomach, and I couldn't eat. And cannabis was the only thing that got me through that. And they had me on Valium and Baclofen suppositories. That was the only other drug that I agreed to use. And that wiped my memory. I couldn't even get 1 mile down the road in my car to McDonald's, and I had lived in the same place for 10 years. So at that point, I said, "I'm going to make this into suppositories also." And Duke Medical Center has record of me making my suppositories and using it, and how it worked so much better than their Valium and Baclofen.
No, you say they have records of it. Why do they have records of it?
Because I made sure to point it out. I wanted them to know, and I want them to tell other women. It's not fair to be giving women vaginal suppositories of Valium and knowing what that'll do to your mind. And it's bypassing everything, going straight into the blood, and they know what it's going to do and the side effects. And no one's giving the proper warnings on that.
With your endometriosis, would you say that you probably would have died if it wasn't for cannabis?
Most definitely. I would have died from that because I couldn't eat. And, it's funny, I would talk to people because cancer will kill you so fast, you don't realize that something innocuous like endometriosis can also kill you. But if it hooks onto your stomach and you can't hold food in and you can't get any nutrients. I just threw up all the time. There were days I threw up more than 20 times a day. And it was just the muscle spasms, and cannabis could control that to some degree.
Did you lose a lot of weight during that period?
I did. I've lost about 40 pounds. I've put back on about 5 now.
Okay, how do you feel?
I feel great. For the first time in 10 years, I feel great. I feel like I could tackle the world. And before, I would get about 2 hours a day before this last surgery in November. I got literally 2 hours a day, and I could plan to either go grocery shopping or do laundry. And that was it. I was asleep the rest of the time.
So in November of last year, you were sleeping a lot. You were active for a couple of hours a day. And today, in July, you are a vibrant woman.
Yes. Yes, and I'm pink. It's hilarious. People actually, friends that I met when I moved to Georgia and I saw them again after surgery said, oh my goodness, you're pink. What happened? I mean, it was that visible.
So you've gone from gray to pink.
So yes. you've got blood flow happening.
I do.
Yeah.
But it was, and I give cannabis credit on, it couldn't cure what I had because there's nothing you can do about adhesions and growth like that. But it could definitely give me the ability to eat. It could release the muscle spasms enough to allow my body to process some of the food. My husband and I, it was difficult. Every day we would have to do stomach massages to push everything through. But cannabis gave us, you know, through the lotions, we had that going on through the outside, and it was everywhere.
How does your mother feel about it?
She's very happy. Of course, now she worries that I might smoke too much since I don't have any current issues.
No.
And is your husband a convert as well?
He is. He is.
That's fantastic.
It's been an interesting road. It's been an interesting road, but not one I would trade, I have to say, because now I can make other people aware. I had no idea. And to be perfectly honest, I was that judgy dare child adult who, because I knew my brother smoked, I would buy him gift cards. I didn't want to give him cash because I didn't want him spending his money on drugs. I feel so bad about that now. I mean, I had so much judgment, and now I can go out and help people and try to show them that there's another way where you don't have to beg for help from your doctors.
Yeah. Have you told your brother that story?
I have.
And what
we talk about it all the time. He laughs at me.
Yeah. How much do you consume a day, and in what form?
Usually right now I'm down to just smoking, and actually because I've been quitting cigarettes, I'm consuming probably an eighth a day to a quarter a day just because I'm rolling it up into spliffs. But that's about it now.
That's about it? You don't take the oil or have edibles or tinctures or things like that?
Not terribly. This past week I had a little bit. I still get a little bit of pain. I think it's probably cyclical. And so I had to take a little bit of oil for that. But that's about it. Like a tenth of a gram. I mean, nothing.
Have you noticed any change in your Ehlers-Danlos syndrome as a result of taking cannabis?
No, and I don't think there'll be any changes on that. It's just poor connective tissue. I don't think cannabis can change that. I'm sure that I've had protection with my bones with the CBGs because I've had to take the Lupron shot for... I probably took it for 2 years all in, and they now say that that causes a lot of bone deterioration, and I don't seem to have that problem.
What is that called? What is that called, Jenna? That shot you took?
Lupron or Depro-Lupron.
Oh,
it's
okay.
What they give men with prostate cancer to stop hormones. Yeah, it's one of the things that they do for women to stop hormones for endometriosis, but they don't share the side effects of it. So luckily I had the cannabis on board during that time, and I'm hoping it protected me.
I'm wondering if you did cannabis in a stronger form consistently, like cannabis oil, whether you might see some changes. I'm not completely convinced that cannabis couldn't at least assist in making your disease less impactful.
Well, yeah, it does make it less impactful. Because it controls the little bit of arthritis in the hips now. It's the hips the shoulders pop out. I have a rib that twists. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But
you know, we had a little girl who was going to have her, she was 5 years old, was going to have her, I recognize it's not the same thing. She was going to have her leg amputated at the hip. And we started her on THC at night, THC oil at night and CBD in the daytime. And I think it was 2 weeks and this fracture healed. Like there was this fracture in her thigh that wouldn't heal. And it was, as a result of radiation that they had done, her bones were really brittle and they'd been trying to heal it for over a year. So,
wow.
Yeah, I think there's a chance that this could help with the whole connective tissue thing.
Well, you know, I think brittle bone is connected to Ehlers-Danlos. A lot of people with brittle bone have Ehlers-Danlos.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, and there's another one, Marfan syndrome, that's very closely connected to us. They're the really tall people with really long limbs.
Yes.
We just interviewed a woman in Washington State with Marfan syndrome.
Yeah,
she's tall.
That's right,
she's
next to Ehlers-Danlos.
Yeah, she's 5'11" tall, and it's very similar to what you have, isn't it?
It's the same thing, pretty much. They have a few additional issues because of the height and the joints, but yeah, it's pretty much the same thing.
I'm wondering, Jenna, if you started taking the cannabis oil in higher concentration. Excuse me, you know, higher concentration, as Corey recommended. I think, you know, it's worth a try.
I would be willing to do that. I've always been trying to solve it mode. I've never really considered anything. Now that I've gotten myself stable, I could do something. Actually pay attention, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you mentioned a few moments ago that you have a rib that twists. Tell us about that.
Well, I didn't even realize that until last week. I came to a massage therapist here. I have a point in my back that hurts terribly, and it hurts to breathe. And I've just always assumed it was a muscle. I've had massage people try to get it, and I end up in more pain than before every time. No one's ever been able to fix it. And this one massage therapist who used to be a nurse and a physical therapist before her retirement job, she fixed it. She rolled the rib. She found it on the front side and literally somehow rolled it back into place, and it immediately stopped hurting.
Wow.
So, yeah, 40 years in, and I'm finding new things out about my body. I think that's pretty cool.
That is cool. How are your hips?
Oh, they're very loose. They fall in and out all the time.
you say that so nonchalantly. Oh, they fall out all the time.
Yeah. You know, if you stand on one leg with it straight and you've got the other one bent, so all your weight's on that one, my hip will go sliding out.
Well, that can be awkward at times.
It could be. It could be. We learn to laugh it off, I think.
You indicated earlier in this interview that you make your own oils and tinctures. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How has that been for you?
Well, it's okay. It's a little more expensive trying to make it from pretty much $400 an ounce bud out there on the East Coast. But I've just done the basics. I haven't made FICO yet. I have used FICO, and when I make the suppositories, I always do that from a FICO beginning. But other than that, I make coconut oil infused and just put it in everything. Sometimes a tincture, but...
Now, you are from Georgia. What is the medical cannabis law in Georgia with respect to recreational use and medical use?
It's terribly illegal. I mean, they have the CBD law for the babies with seizures. I don't really count that as anything. I mean, honestly, I don't think it's helping anybody. In fact, I tell most of the parents I speak to think about it long and hard before they hand their name and information over to a registration group that they're going to be bringing in an illegal substance into the state. You know, they have a very small registration. And I think seven ailments.
Seven ailments, so, that's all you can use it for.
Yes, and nobody can grow it in the state. You can't buy it in the state. You can't make it. You can only have it if you have their card, but there's no way to get it.
Why is that?
Because it's illegal.
I'm baffled. It just doesn't make sense, does it?
It really doesn't. In fact, I taught my dentist as my senator, actually. And he's Republican, but he's really nice. I really like him. And obviously, I'm not Republican.
I got that.
I'm independent, though. But he told me, I told him I was going to move to Washington because I needed a job, and medical marijuana is my preferred medicine. And with the drug test situation in Georgia, I can't find a job. And he said, what if you could get one of those cards? Although my ailment's not in there, it wouldn't matter in that state. The companies are still drug testing. So I'm hoping that maybe if I open his eyes, he'll try to make changes from the inside.
Give me your perspective of the difference between Georgia and Washington State.
Oh, in my perspective, in Georgia, they're hunting the people like we're animals. They're hunting us. They've started a new program where the police can now determine if you are drunk, even if you pass their sobriety test and you pass the blood alcohol or the alcohol test. They can now say, well, obviously you're high, and arrest you and hold you in jail with no proof other than what they're saying. To me, they're hunting the patients because they're taking them in and they're going to start pulling blood on everybody they can, and they're going to find out which ones of us are patients.
Is the public opinion in the South towards cannabis for medical purposes, at least, is that starting to change?
Even I think the public opinion has changed. Yeah, I think we're at 85% approval with the public. The problem is that there's still a lot of the
politicians.
Yeah, there's something strange where a lot of people just say, well, it's illegal, so you know the risk you're running, just don't do it. I mean, I still get a lot of that.
But the majority of people are in favor of it for medical purposes.
Yeah, they're running about 85% in favor.
Yeah, I think what has happened is that the public opinion has surpassed by a wide margin the opinion of the political leaders in countries all around the world.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the movement is starting to gain momentum. And eventually, you know, probably the South will become like the West Coast at some point in maybe 5 or 10 years.
I hope so.
Or sooner.
It's true. And I know that they have a lot of elections going on right now. And a lot of those, like the mayor of Atlanta's coming up. And there's a couple of people, I believe, whose stance is pro-marijuana, or at least decriminalization on the street, you know, harm reduction. So that's coming up. And Clarksville passed something to where they can, in Georgia, they can, I think it's a $75 fine up to an ounce. So the small communities are trying, and it'll turn.
Yeah, it'll turn. So, Jenna, your health today is improving. You're getting better. Even though your rib pops out occasionally, your hip pops out. But are you off those nasty pharmaceutical medications?
Completely and 100%. I'm down to, I think my last surgery, I took 20 pills, and it was a massive surgery. And I the first 3 days I'll take them, and that's about it.
Well, we appreciate your time. Sit down, smoke one, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Well, thank you. You too. I hope y'all have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much, Jenna.
And that's another edition of Cannabis Health Radio. Don't forget to check out our webpage, cannabishealthradio.com, and look at some of the apparel that we've got for sale there. Cannabis Health Radio t-shirts, mugs, hats, and hoodies. Wherever you are in the world, thanks very much for listening.
You've been listening to the Cannabis Health Radio podcast. Visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Tune into a major journey podcast today, where guests take listeners on journeys and immerse themselves in the roller coaster ride both in and out of the cannabis space that brought them to where they are today. Throughout our conversations, guests share valuable lessons that they've learned along the way that listeners can use to empower growth both in their personal and professional lives. Check out A Major Journey today on all major podcast platforms.